Hi.
Hi.
I'm Evan.
I'm Addie.
And you are listening to the Speaking English Podcast, the place to be for anyone who wants to watch more movies or read more books but doesn't know where to start. Here we are with episode 180, and it's also book club 27.
Woohoo!
So joining us for book club, as always, or as most of the time, always these days, is Aubrey. How's it going, Aubrey?
Hi, I'm excited to be back on the book club.
Yeah, welcome back. I think this is, well, it's the first one of the new year, but I think this is only the second one we've done since I've come to Spain. So our New Year's resolution is to be more consistent with book club, and I think we can be able to keep it up. I know I've been reading a lot, but
me too.
As long as the books are interesting. But for book club 27, we read Kindred by Octavia Butler. And we'll be talking about that for this episode, but we can get to that in a minute. First of all, I want to hear about your guys' weeks. What's been going on? Addie, you go first. You were on a cruise.
I was on a cruise. it was awesome. I had the time of my life. I went on a Disney cruise because my baby sister is 4. So this was her big kind of surprise, like Christmas present, and her birthday is this week. So it was like Christmas birthday, magical time. And she is just like the perfect age to really, really enjoy a Disney cruise. Like she kind of believes in the legitimacy of all of the characters that she sees around and stuff. And she was so excited to like take pictures with Mickey and Minnie Mouse and the princesses and stuff like that. And like just watching her little mind be totally blown by so much of what was going on the ship was so much fun. So I had a really, really great time. And we got to stop at some like really gorgeous islands in the British Virgin Islands and the United States Virgin Islands and the island that Disney owns, which I didn't know that they own an island, but they do.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. And I went there. And it was so cool. I ate so much really good food. I swam in the ocean. I played on the beach. I had the time of my life. And now I'm back at school.
Incredible. <Yeah. laughs> Did you meet Mickey Mouse?
Yeah, I did.
Incredible.
I didn't get a picture with him, though. But Zach did. Zach hugged Mickey Mouse. Told Peanut about that. Peanut went... Give me a high five. You are so brave.
You got to be brave to hug Mickey Mouse.
You do. He's kind of scary.
Hey, he's kind of intimidating.
There were a couple of people that Peanut would not go Mr. hug. Mouse. He was way too scared. Buzz Lightyear, Sophie from Monsters, Inc. Goofy. He's like 7.5 feet tall for some reason. Like, basically, I don't know who they have in there, like an NBA player. Like, I was way too scared of that one.
It's like an NBA player on stilts or something.
Yeah.
That's so fun.
How was my week?
Yeah. How's your week been, Aubrey?
It's been pretty good. Back to school, unfortunately. I picked up more hours at my job, so mostly I just kind of school and then I work and then I sleep and the cycle repeats mostly. But you know, it's not the worst thing. It's not the worst thing that could happen. But yeah, pretty quiet over here. What about you, Evan?
The 9-to-5 grind.
Okay.
Being a member of the working class isn't right.
The workforce.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
That's kind of like me, except that I have way more free time and I just spend more of my time sleeping. So this week I didn't do anything. I went to school. I did my stuff. Actually, I shouldn't say I didn't do anything, but, I stayed at home. I went to school and I came home and then I went to school and I came home, took lots of naps. I had like this weird cough, which I don't know what the deal is, but, it's been annoying, but I don't think I'm sick, but I still don't feel like I should be doing too much, straining myself maybe. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's been really like not much going on. Although I did do something on last Saturday. I went to this little party and met a lot of cool new people. So that was the highlight. But then I started feeling bad the next day. So I don't know.
You can't have it all. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's a little weird because it's like, man, I haven't really been doing anything. And the day that I do something, I start feeling like I shouldn't have done it because I start feeling bad the next day. I don't know. Kind of weird. But I have been starting to prep for my application to grad school, which I may have mentioned on here, but I'm actually like doing it now, which is cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's I don't know. I'm working on it. I'm reading lots of fun stuff. And I didn't realize how much you have to write for these long-term papers.
Yeah.
Because I asked for some examples. I'm in email correspondence with a former teacher that I had.
All right.
And I was like, I don't know what's really expected out of me in a paper such as this. Can you send me like an example of a good one? Mm-hmm. And so I was surprised when I read it and it took me more than one sitting to read. It was like 60 pages. That's crazy. But I'm also noticing that with film papers, if you haven't seen the movie that they're talking about, a lot goes over your head. Mm-hmm. So I might watch a couple of movies that were mentioned in this paper and then revisit it. But that's like the thing that has me excited right now is doing stuff for that.
It is very exciting.
And reading Kindred by Octavia Butler. Once I got around to like actually reading a good chunk of this like every day, I got through it so quickly.
Nice. Me too, actually. I read it on the cruise, which was a little bit weird because so dark and sad. And
that's
I was
wild.
Like embracing the Disney magic, and then I go to my room and depress myself with
and
this
read
book
about slavery.
Yeah.
It's just Mickey Mouse reading over your shoulder.
Goofy. Hot take, I think Goofy would have owned slaves.
That is a bold thing to say. Is Goofy a cow or a dog?
He's a dog.
Pretty sure he's a dog.
I'm going to have to agree.
Yeah, it's something about the way that he's...
Pluto be treated as an animal when he himself is a dog?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's my exact reasoning as well. I'm glad that that you agree on that so quickly. I thought I was going to have to defend myself there.
If he was a cow, my answer would be different. And I kind of like to just operate under the assumption that he is a cow because it just makes more sense. But whatever.
Why is he on two legs, but the
exactly.
dog, the other dog?
Exactly.
Exactly. It's a little messed up.
I don't like that. I don't like that now that you've said that. Okay.
Let's see. No new questions in the mailbag. If you want to speak to us, put some questions in the mailbag and we'll get right to it. I don't know if we talked about it recently, but the mailbag is basically just an open spot to say whatever and like interact with us. You can give us recommendations, like reviews on what we're doing, good or bad. Or we'll like usually ask a question to you guys if you have any answers. So stuff like that. But if you want to interact with the pod, that's the way to do it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let's get into it, shall we?
We shall.
This was your pick, Addy, right?
Yep.
Cool. Do you want to introduce our book of the club this week, 27?
Okay, we read Kindred by Octavia Butler, which was published, I think, in 1979. I think right at the
sounds right
end.
To me, yeah.
I chose it because I've read one Octavia Butler book before, which was The Parable of the Sower, which I loved. I gave like a perfect 5-star glowing review. I really love that book. So I've been wanting to read more Octavia Butler, and I thought that this one would be a perfect one for book club because it's not a series and most of her Most of her work is in the format of a series, but this one's a standalone. It's really well known. I've heard a lot of praise of it, so I figured we should give it a go. It's about a woman named Dana who is capable of time travel. Saying that she's capable of time travel is like not the right word. Like, time travel happens to her against her will. She lives with her husband in the 70s in her real life. And when she turns 26, she starts slipping through time and space back to slave times to the farm owned by some of her earliest ancestors. One of whom is like a slave owner, a white man on a plantation, and one of whom is a slave. And so it kind of becomes her responsibility to like see that they survive long enough to then like lead to her family because they're her ancestors. But obviously she, as a Black woman, a modern Black woman, is like in serious trouble. every time she goes back there, it's really unsafe for her. So the whole novel, you kind of follow, you see that sort of whole experience from beginning to end as she figures out the time travel ordeal.
Incredible summary.
Thank you. It's hard to give a synopsis of a book. Like every time it's one of my books and I have to do that part, I feel so ill-prepared and I feel like I'm like stumbling over my words, but it's just that a lot happens in a book. And it's like, how much can you really say without spoiling it, but still like introducing people to the concept. But yeah, that's what this is about.
There you have it. What are our overall thoughts on this one?
I thought it was great. I don't want to, it feels weird to be like, I loved it. It was so good because it's so heavy. I was kind of doing some research about it and just seeing like what things people have already said about it. And it's kind of widely considered like one of the most accurate historical depictions of slavery. Oh. So a lot of this book really is just like an account of things that actually happened, very brutal things that actually happened. So it's really, really intense. It's really hard to read, hard to stomach. So I don't know. I don't know how to like express my praise for it without like, I don't know. It's just so hard to talk about. But I thought that it was great. I thought that it was really, really smart. I thought that it managed to do a lot of things. Oh, I also read, in this interview one time with Octavia Butler, she said that the main inspiration for writing this book came to her because she had heard like a younger Black man sort of say that he couldn't understand like why slaves of this time were so submissive, like why they, like why Black people at that time let all of these things happen to them and there wasn't much fighting back. And Octavia Butler was obviously like very taken aback by that sentiment that I guess maybe a lot of people shared. I don't really know, when she was writing this in the 70s. And so she wanted to write this whole book that sort of like asks that question, like, what would you, as a modern person, if you got sucked back into this time, what would you really do? What would you actually really be capable of? So that's kind of like the thesis of this book. And I think she does such a good job of answering that and such a good job of showing you like, no, it was not about submission. Like it was not about like a character flaw. It was about how absolutely insane this time was. And then I think she also like branches off of that main theme so well and just has so much more to say like along the same vein, but it just says a lot. And it's not even that long of a book and I read it really fast because it's so page turny even though it's so dense and heavy and historical too. So it's just really impressive. I guess this was my general thought.
Nice. Aubrey, what were your thoughts?
My thoughts were that it was pretty good. And I mean, it's kind of like the same thing where I never want to give it too much praise because it's such a dark and it feels almost superficial to just go, yeah, it's a good book. Like it's more than that. But I mean, there were things that also I didn't really enjoy. I think somehow the writing was just kind of hard to get through. And there were points where I was just, you know, like, what is the point? Like, why are we talking about this? And so in terms of pacing, it could sometimes be going at like 60 miles an hour or it's like crawling along. And that was kind of hard to read.
That's a great way to put it. There were some segments that I was kind of skimming a little. Like, I was sort of like, I just don't care about this part as much as, like, I want to go back to the other things that were being discussed. And I don't really like the way that Octavia Butler writes dialogue that much. And I don't really know how to say why. It's just like a lot of like short, snappy sentences, I guess, that I'm reading them and I'm like, people do not talk like this.
I
don't like that. In the parable of the sower, it really worked for me because the girl whose head you're in that whole time, she's kind of a poet and she's very weird. She talks like that in those short little breaks and it just makes a lot of sense for her character. Okay. Like, but I never was like, oh, that's like how Octavia Butler thinks people talk. I was like, that's how Octavia Butler thinks this character talks. And that made sense. But then reading the same type of dialogue writing in this book, I was like, oh, that's just how she writes. And it's kind of unnatural. It didn't work nearly as well in this book for me as it did in the other one.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. And then my other point was that Dana as a person, for all her nuance, and I mean, she is complicated and she does feel like a real person, I don't think she questions things nearly enough, because if this happened to me, I would be kind of losing it. But somehow, and it's like, I wonder if it's supposed to show her strength as a person, but it just kind of comes off as that she knew it was coming the whole time and she just kind of accepted it. But I kind of wish that there'd been more internal or maybe even external questioning of why. It just, I feel like it would have made her character not more palatable necessarily, but almost more believable, and it would have felt more like a human that I could relate to. But here it was kind of just, it's like when you're playing a video game and the main person is just doing things and you don't really have a why, but you just kind of go with it to get through the video game. It's kind of like that. But yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. She really does just get on board the very first time.
Really quickly.
Like, yeah, really, I guess I've talked about that. Yeah.
It's interesting because I think that with the narrative that she's going, like the reason that you mentioned, and it also at the back of my book, it had like some of this information. And I think it mentioned the same thing about like the reason that she had for writing the book. Mm-hmm. I think that it makes sense when you keep that in mind of like, if it's in a piece that's like kind of going down the road of like, why, like, how can any of this stuff happen, and like try to articulate it that way, then it works. So I don't know. I think it's maybe like looking at this one through a science fiction lens or not. Cause I don't think apparently, so Octavia Butler is like primarily a science fiction writer, right? Is that correct? Yeah. So like this book, I wouldn't classify as a science fiction at all, because I think if you try to do that, then you lose a lot of the point of it, I guess. Like, I think it doesn't address the science fiction side of things, because like that's not, it's like primary choice, I guess. And I think that stood out to me a lot reading it, because I was like, yeah, this is a weird situation that we're kind of just like going down the path of. But I think, I don't know how you tell that story that you're trying to tell without some element of that. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was also surprised to see this classed as a science fiction, because it didn't really read that way to me. It was more just literary fiction.
Yeah, I agree. But
I also kind of appreciate that Octavia Butler doesn't explain the time travel at all. It's just a thing that you buy into and we're just going with it, because I do feel that if she'd incorporated more elements of that, the narrative and the impact probably wouldn't have been the same.
Yeah, I agree. So now I'm going to give my overall thoughts. I think that this was good, like really good by the end of it. It took me quite a while to get into the swing of this book. And I thought the first handful of like the first three chapters, maybe the first like two times she goes back to the olden days were kind of, I don't know, like it felt really clunky to read, I guess I'd put it. I think I didn't really buy into the concept until it got into the idea of like really having to confront these issues. And like, I don't know what that is, but I think part of it is like the dialogue felt very like heavy handed, maybe, I guess. But yeah, those first couple of chapters, I was like, ooh, I don't really like this at all. And then it kind of won me over as it really got into these complex issues of like, how would you survive in this situation? And like what the answer to that says about this historical situation. I thought that was investigated or like addressed, brought up, and like, yeah, like what you said was like her primary purpose is like, when I realized that kind of towards the end and then like reaffirmed it while reading like the supplemental material at the back of the book, I was like, okay, yeah, I think that is done super well. And I think that there's a lot there. Like, there's a lot of complex issues there. And I'm sure that would be like doubled for like a Black person today, you know, having to deal with these issues. So I don't know. Yeah, it's a very like nuanced book for a short, like fairly short book. I was going to say for a short story, but that's not it. But like for how short and I don't know, maybe not short quite as much as like contained. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't get any extra information about what happens after she doesn't have to deal with this anymore. It's kind of isolated to these occurrences and these, because it seems to take place over a fairly short amount of time. I mean, in the
present day.
The present day, yeah, yeah. So it's like a very distinct and traumatic chapter in her life, and then we're left to imagine like what the repercussions of that are, maybe. And and I'm glad that it's kind of like contained like that, and I think that there's, by doing that, like there's so much to chew on, I guess.
Totally. And there are some like moments that are like one liners or just like one little instance that packs such a big punch that like managed to like kind of bring up this whole theme in and of themselves. Like the moment when she loses her arm on her way back for the last time, that happens so fast. I had to read that page like 3 times because I could not comprehend what just happened. It was so confusing to me.
Cause like the book begins that she loses her arm, but I had forgotten about that by that point.
I didn't even remember that until just now when you just said that.
Mm.
But yeah, like that moment, that whole, I don't know. It just brings up this whole idea that like you would not come out of an experience like this at all the same. Like you would be missing significant pieces of the person that you were before. Like in her case, literally, like physically. Yeah. And that, yeah, it just kind of really hits at this like lasting impact of the trauma of memories of like generational trauma. Like once you learn about these things that happened not even to you, but to people in your lineage, people in the past, like you're not the same, you know, you're like irreparably changed. And she says that like so like cutting edge, like she loses her arm and it's like such a punch in the gut type of moment. And it happens so fast. And it's like not the main part of the story at all. And there was a couple things like that. Like a lot of this sort of end dynamic between Rufus and Dana and this sort of like strange possessive love he's developed for her that only really comes up like at the end, and like Alice's suicide, like the whole last like 50 pages of this book, it's like everything that happens quickly and has its own unique thing to add to the story, and it's crazy. Like such a big deal. So I agree that like the end of the book is the best part. Like the way that it all wraps up and ties together was like just fantastic. So wild.
Yeah, especially that scene. The one that really stuck with me was with, I think it's Alice and Dana, and then Rufus comes in and he says something to the effect of like, look, when he's looking at the two of them, he says like, you're a whole woman now with like two halves of you. It's like, oh, yeah. That's actually kind of deep. But it makes you, it like reinforces this whole idea that she's going back to something or going back to a piece of herself. Because otherwise you are just kind of, she does kind of feel like she's been set adrift in an ocean. But then there is always that tie that this is her past. I mean, far removed, but it is still a part of her.
Yeah, and Alice has this part of her that's in the future that she doesn't know about, that doesn't exist yet. Like, this whole circle of time, like, they, Rufus and Alice and their kids don't survive or don't exist without Dana, who doesn't exist without them. Like, literally, like, it's like
this it's crazy, just like Back to the Future.
Just like Back to the Future.
It is. It's a little darker, though. It's a little more.
That theme of it is so cool, and I love that the book is called Kindred. I think now, having finished it, I'm like, that is just the absolute most perfect title she could have picked for this. And this whole theme of, we are like products of everything that's come before us, and also somehow everything that's come before us is like a product of us. It's like kind of a really crazy thing to think about, but this book, it's so cool, it's so amazing. I really liked all that. And yeah, that part where Rufus looks at them and is like, you're one whole woman now. That says so much about like the themes of the book and the, I don't know, the way that things transcend time, but also about his perspective of women, and especially like Black women, like not being whole things on their own.
Mm. It's even like what you just said, like women being things, because they are very much things, and some are like reduced more to objects than others.
Yeah.
And so it's a very, it's quite a disturbing thing to like read the way that he behaves, but then to think like, no, that's accurate. That's how it was.
And it's so disturbing. And like what you just said, like how some women are more objectified than others, this book really kind of shows you that like, even if you think that you're safe, even if you think you're one of the ones who's not being objectified, it's just a matter of time. Like in the blink of an eye, that can change for you. Mm-hmm. Because that's the power that men had at that time, that white men had.
Yeah. It's crazy to think that Rufus is like an example of what a good person would be.
Yeah, or a better person when compared to his father, especially.
Yeah. And even his father compared to like other, like people back in the day, and
slave owners and traders like deeper in the South, like they kind of kept mentioning that like it could be worse, they could always be sold to somewhere that is even worse. Mm-hmm. So crazy.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, I found Rufus to like be a very interesting character to read, because there's a lot of like contradictions there, and you can see that he's holding like maybe different moralities,
and for sure.
And I think that it's really interesting to see when the dad dies, how the dynamic changes when he's like in charge of everything then. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the results of that, but how your upbringing influences, like the predominant like culture of the time influences, like maybe corrupts a little bit, corrupts ideas that I don't know. It's hard to say that like he learned so much from Dana as a kid, because she shows up for like very short amounts of time at the beginning until So I don't know how much like he was influenced by her like the early days, but there's always like this friction of like what is considered right in by Dana's standards, like in the current time, and then when she's not there, he has everything from his own time period like telling him what's right and wrong, and the friction there was very interesting.
Plus there's this added layer of like, what does he owe her because she saved his life a couple of times? And if she comes back again, it's going to be just another like life or death situation for him. And like, I'm sure that that's really hard for him to wrestle with in his mind. I really like that the kind of choice to like go through Rufus's whole life essentially in this book. Like the time travel could have been done in a lot of different ways, you know, like she obviously got to make up all of her own rules about how the time travel works and what times Dana pops into and everything like that. So getting to see Rufus from being a really young kid into being an adult and like the owner of this plantation, I think was so smart because it really shows you as you read it, like just how much everybody at this time was susceptible to and like how much Rufus was always just going to be a product of his time. And like, no matter what he did or didn't learn from Dana early in his life, like when he was in his formative years, he still was so impacted by this like very sinister, very pervasive, like blatant racism of the time, you know, like, and that was just never gonna go any differently.
Yeah. And it's such a power dynamic too, that Rufus can just call Dana through time whenever his life is endangered. And in doing so, I mean, deeply harms her and also endangers her. And it's just kind of a weird temporal power dynamic added to like a social power dynamic. I keep saying power dynamic. Power inequity is probably the word I want. A deep, deep power inequity. But yeah, it was a thing that I noticed.
I was gonna say, and she doesn't even get anything in return. Like she just goes,
no, she gets nothing.
Endangers herself and saves him, and like doesn't ever.
She gets to exist.
Protected. But yeah, the truth is, she kind of
deeply traumatized, but.
It really is a choice. Oh, I just realized it's so parallel to what she was saying. Like, she's like, at the end of the book, when she's like, just like the slaves in the field, like, let themselves be worked like this. And the other guy is like, let themselves. And she's like, yeah, like, obviously it's not much of a choice, but it is a choice. It's work in the field like that or die. And for her, she's also facing the same choice. It's save Rufus's life and put herself in this harm and this danger or die, you know, or cease to exist. Kind of crazy.
Crazy when you think about it.
Pretty crazy.
There is like a specific moment that was like brought up a couple times about how Rufus didn't write like his will to free everyone because he thought that if he did that, Dana would have no reason to like save him. And the fact that she didn't like think about that until he mentioned it, but then it was like, yeah.
Yes, you're right.
I mean, it feels like very sad because that's kind of the reality of the situation is like that. Yeah. Like there's weird dynamic that develops between them as a result of this, like because she notices how poorly he treats her and especially like all the other people. Mm-hmm. Versus like this. A certain sense of still liking him, mm-hmm. Despite all of that. So I thought that I think was what kept me so engaged towards the end of this book.
Yeah. I think it speaks to the testament of Dana's character that she doesn't even think about that. But then I guess it's also, maybe she's been really alienated from the idea of thinking of people as property that you can just get rid of or give to someone else when you die. But yeah, we did not like Rufus, not a fan, just another man disappointing me. Anyways,
just another guy. Okay, speaking of things that like Dana did and didn't think about, I was bewildered by how much stuff she knew going into the past about what was going to happen and everything, like in terms of like history. Like she knew people's names. She knew general locations. She knew some dates of things. And like I know that she was doing some reading like in between when she was going back and forth. But a lot of it, I feel like she just knew before she even did that reading. And I'm just like, wow, if I was in this situation, if I went back in time, I would know not a damn thing, dude. I would have no knowledge like that to ground me in anything. She and what's his face, Kevin, both, when they go back, they're like, oh yeah, that happened over here. We got to get over here because this is where this is going to happen. I wouldn't know anything like that. I was kind of like, am I dumb and they're smart? Or like, back in the day? Did people have more knowledge of history? Because, you know, they're in the 70s. This is like 50 years ago. Like, did the average person in the 70s know more history than I do? I'm not sure.
For whatever reason, I feel like I don't know enough about American history.
Me either.
I'm pretty confident about like my European history, like generally. Mm-hmm. Like if you dropped me into Europe any point from like 1500 to 2000 and I knew like what year it was, I would know generally where what's going on.
Yeah.
That's a bold claim. But like I would be better. Well, I don't know. It's hard to say if I would be better or not, because like I think there's a lot of stuff that's like ingrained in you as an American. I'm learning this more and more, like interacting with people here. Is that like certain things are like very American, or like certain knowledge to have is like very American knowledge, which is something interesting that I hadn't really thought of. But I wouldn't know any of the languages. So there's that.
Yeah, English, I mean, we can drop you into like 1940s Europe and see what happens. Oh, I'm sure it'll be a great time. Yeah,
I don't know if that's what I meant, but
you said any time.
No,
you
I said did.
Any
I did.
Time
I
from
did.
The 1500s. Was it?
I
the
would 1500s? Know. Yeah, I mean, I would know what would be going on at the time.
Did you survive?
I mean, probably not. But
I can't believe that Kevin just got a job. Honestly, one of the saddest things to think about after this book is this, like the idea of getting trapped in the past. And like your only way out, and also like the love of your life, you have no idea when they're going to come back, and you have to just go on for years and years and years, like never knowing if you're going to get out, like just sort of existing in that limbo, and also in such a brutal time. Mm-hmm. Like that kept me up at night after that section where Dana goes back without Kevin. I was like, holy crap, that's crazy. That's so scary.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised Kevin survived those, what, 5 years? I mean,
and he got a job. Like, he just lived his life. He moved around. That's crazy. I have no idea what I would do in such a situation.
I also kind of appreciate that Kevin is just a man. Like, he's just a man. He's a blank slate who pretty much he's just Kevin. He just moves the plot forward every now and again. And I feel like in a lot of sci-fi novels, there's always that one woman character usually who has that role. But in this one, it's reversed. It's just a man named Kevin. We don't get a lot of insight into him, and we don't need a lot of insight, quite frankly.
The main thing that I think about when I think about like the purpose of Kevin is how when they first go to the past together, he's like, you know, this would be a cool time to live it. Like, you would get to see a lot. And Dana was like, fuck you. How can you even say something like that? And that's kind of it. And then she goes back to the future and then back to the past. And Kevin is a changed person, dude, like just a shell of his former self. And it turns out that it was not a cool time to live after all. I think that realization, but just like really driving home that point of like, first of all, the cool things that you might get to see in this time are completely outweighed by the devastating violence that you would see of the time. And also that even if you go back into this time thinking that you're kind of safe because you're a white man, you're not. Like, it's all of it is going to impact you heavily.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Kevin.
Oh, Kevin. Poor Kevin.
He is surprisingly okay with everything that happens, which I do think I should give him some credit where credit is due, because his wife just starts disappearing basically and going back in time, and his response is just kind of, all right, you need a backpack, you need a pocket, here's a gun, like, let's go.
Yeah.
Which I really appreciate, because I think if that happened to me, I would be like, you need to go to the hospital, what do you mean? But I do appreciate that.
Yeah,
I'd bring a bag of flaming hot Cheetos and see how people react to eating.
That's how you kill Rufus. It's you just let him have a little sniff.
It's the meme about like, this would kill a Victorian era child.
Yeah.
The back of my book has some discussion questions in it.
Are any of them
good discussion questions? While we're on the topic of the book, the book cover, there is one book cover out there that is so ugly.
We've talked about this.
It's awful. That's why I had to buy the UK version, which is normally something I avoid at all costs. I hate the UK version of all things.
But yeah, there's one where it looks like a Lifetime original movie, like
it's so
icon or something. It's not good. I don't even think I have to describe it. I think if someone goes looking for the book, they're going to see this cover.
They'll know the one right away.
Yeah.
Any good discussion questions?
Honestly, we've kind of answered a lot of them.
That means we're good at our job.
Professional book covers.
Yeah. Okay, here's something we haven't talked about, which is the character of Sarah. This question is, think about how Dana and Sarah's relationship develops throughout the novel. What is Sarah most driven by, and how does Dana's perception of her friend change over time? Any thoughts?
I thought Sarah was cool.
Sarah was cool.
She was a real one, for sure. I think that, well, I don't know how related this is to the question that you just asked, but just another interesting thing that I noticed while reading the whole time was how everyone reacts to Dana when she just comes back and she's the same age as they've always known her.
Yeah.
And while everyone else is changing and moving forward, and you kind of touched on this about how like Rufus grows up, mm-hmm. you know, before her eyes, is that like everyone gets older in each time mm-hmm. that she comes back and she stays the same age. And the dad, Tom, that's his name, right? Tom Whalen. Like thinks she's like a sorceress or something.
Right.
And just kind of, I just thought there was an interesting dynamic about how situations are different. And like a big part of that is how people have like aged and sometimes grown as she comes back each time. And I thought that that was cool to see with Sarah because she was around, you know, the whole time. And I don't know, like, how different maybe her attitudes were from each time period section, or like how the dynamic was similar or different. But it was just interesting to see her as kind of like the, I don't know, like the rock or the foundation that was always there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. Another question is, like, how do you imagine the future for Dana and Kevin, like back in the present day, if they never go back to the past again? Like, how do they go on with their lives after having this experience?
Dana has one arm.
Yeah. I was really wondering, like, how is she going to explain that to people?
Okay, that's something that's been bugging me. Because what explanation could you give the police that isn't going to result in, like, at least some kind of charge being thrown at Kevin? Right? He's like, what are you going to say?
She had to have, like, gone to the hospital. And they had to be like, how did you, like, perfectly sever this arm? And, like, the rest of your body is, like, pretty intact. Like, unharmed. Like, that, what the hell did she possibly say to them? I can't even imagine.
I don't even know. I don't know. I think they're both changed and damaged people coming back from the experience. And mm-hmm. so... yeah, I imagine that they live peacefully ever after, mostly because I think Dana deserves that. She's had enough, okay?
And they write about it.
Just let her be. Yeah.
They're both writers. Go write a book or something. Am I right?
You're so right.
Yeah, but I think I said this a little earlier, but I like how that wasn't really investigated within the book, because I think that that would bog it down. That would make it a little bit more heavy-handed, I think.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
towards the end is like, this is what we learned from this experience. And I don't know.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. I do like that the arm is never, like, you don't really get a conclusion as to how she explains that away, because I think anything that would have been written, I would have criticized it. Like, there's no explanation in which I am satisfied.
Yeah,
what do you tell the police? What do you tell your family? Like, how do you,
they don't really have too much family.
Yeah, well, but she came out as a sister, right?
It's her cousin. And her cousin thought that the first time that she came to her that Kevin beat her. And now it's going to be like, holy crap. See, Kevin chop your arm off.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that entire thing where her cousin just kind of like lets it go that Kevin has possibly beaten Dana.
Yeah.
And is just like, it's none of my business.
She said, we trust each other with that sort of stuff. Like, I think that that's fair.
I think I don't know. Maybe I'm too nosy for my own good, but if one of my cousins said that, I would have been like, no, we're getting a hitman.
If any of my friends or anything came to me and I was under the impression that they'd been beaten by a man, I would go ballistic. Like, that would not, I would not just be like, okay.
Okay.
What you gotta do. But whatever.
Yeah, and then Kevin.
That would have complicated things in the book, though. Like, I wouldn't have liked getting into that, because I don't know.
Yeah.
Kevin alone. Well, also, he wasn't there at that point. That's when she came back and left him.
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. I don't know, but he could have skipped town in the present day. Like, I don't know. And then another thing that I feel like was not really explained is that Kevin has aged 5 years in the space of like days, right?
Yeah.
And they acknowledge it that he was sick, but I feel like I would still personally be asking more questions.
And he has a giant scar on his face now too.
Yeah.
How'd you get the scar,
Kevin? I personally would have questions.
Yeah. Imagine seeing your friend a couple days after the last time you saw them and they had aged 5 years. That would be so disorienting. That'd be crazy. Yeah.
I don't even think you would recognize them at first, right?
Yeah, 5 years is kind of a long time. That's crazy.
And then you think that COVID was only 4 years ago, all of 4 years ago already. I was talking about this earlier today, about how like time seems to have stopped once COVID started.
Yeah.
And is only moving again very recently. Is that what we have to say about Kindred?
I think so. That's all I need to say.
Are we going to hit him with a rating?
I think I don't know if I want to read this book.
Oh, me either. I wouldn't give it like a perfect rating as a book. We've discussed like some of the weird like pacing and writing things, but I think it's like kind of a historical text. It's incredible. Like, it's so engaging. It really teaches you a lot. It really gets you thinking about these things in a different kind of more personal way. So I would like highly recommend it for anybody who wants it as like a learning opportunity, I guess.
Yeah, I would have to agree.
Yeah, I would recommend it. It's worth a read.
Yeah, it's a bit heavy, though, be forewarned.
Yeah.
Yeah, just a little, just a touch.
It's a bit.
A bit heavy.
Don't read it on a Disney cruise.
Yeah, confront the dog-owning dog. What's his name? Goofy?
Yeah,
Goofy. Okay.
Or do to Goofy. Balance out the vibes. Say, I'm feeling too happy right now. Time to read a book. Time to read this sad book. But yeah, that's Kindred by Octavia Butler, which I finally learned the title and author of after not being able to remember it the first couple times.
Good job.
It's ingrained now. Cool. Next up is Aubrey to select our book club book for book club 28. Any ideas of what it's going to be?
No. I'll get back to you in, I don't know, 3 to 5 business days. I'll figure it out for sure. Cool. But at this point, we do not have another book.
Awesome.
Great.
Well, yeah, so we'll decide on that and then announce it on a different episode of the pod. I think next week is Shiner's or the next episode, it will be the Shiner nomination show. Because my sources are telling me that the Oscar noms drop on the 23rd. So if we follow tradition and do, I shouldn't say tradition because it was just last year that we actually did that. I think we should do our Shiner noms show.
Okay.
For next episode. So I'll figure out what qualifies and then we can have a fun show deciding what goes up for each category. Cool. I did not bring the awards with me. They're still in Colorado.
That makes sense.
Which is fair. Like I think I can be excused for that. I hope so anyways.
It's not worth the extra weight in your suitcase.
Yeah, I barely made it on weight. Is that what you'd say? I weighed in just under the 50 pounds. I didn't have to pay extra.
Nice.
But yeah, so although we won't have the physical awards to hand out, not like in spirit, we'll still do our Shiner show, I think, if you're down for that, Addie.
I am down.
I think it's a fun thing that we do that we can continue the tradition of and have a third annual.
Woo!
Which is cool. I was like, 180 episodes is a lot by now. And like the amount, what hit me is that I remember when I had hit 1,000 movies watched on Letterboxd and talked about it on here, it was like a very big deal for me. And now I'm about to hit 1,500. And it's like a third of the movies I've watched have been while, more than a third of the movies I've watched in my life have been while the podcast has been active, which I think is super
cool. That's so cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. So Shiner nomination show next week. And then we'll make you guys vote for them. And the mailbag will change into the Shiner voting. And then we'll do a wrap up for January, the next episode.
Perfect.
And move right on along. So I think that means all there's left to do for this time around and book club 28 to be determined. And then announced. So I think that leaves all those left to do for this time around is to recommend an album. Do you have an album to recommend?
I'm going to recommend Rock Steady by No Doubt. An album that I love so dearly. And I have listened to it like nonstop the past 2 days because it was announced that No Doubt is reuniting at Coachella. And I genuinely might buy a ticket to go to Coachella for No Doubt, for Lana Del Rey, and also for No Doubt because I love them so much. Like No Doubt is kind of encompassing of my childhood in my mind. I had Rocksteady on a CD when I was growing up, and I briefly was living at my grandparents' house, and I would take my like CD player and my No Doubt album into the kitchen every morning and put it on the kitchen table and just sit in front of it with my head in my hands, just like absorbing the music. And I have this memory of one time my brother like coming into the room and trying to talk to me and my grandpa being like, Addie is having her time. Just let Addie wake up and have her time. That's what this album is for me. Okay. I love it. You have to listen to it all the way through. It's perfection. And maybe I'll see them at Coachella and tell you guys about it. I don't know yet.
Incredible. Aubrey, do you have an album
this week? I'm going to recommend Remind Me Tomorrow by Sharon Van Etten. Not 100%
Van
sure.
Van Etten.
We're coming up on the 5-year anniversary of this album. She posted about it on her Instagram, and I was like, no way. But it was 2019 when this was released. So in honor of 5 years.
Now that you mention it, that seems right. But this is like the COVID thing where it's like COVID has warped everything.
Yeah.
Like I remember when I like that album came out, and that does not feel 5 years ago. Sorry to cut you off. Continue.
heavy news, man. 5 years ago. It does feel like 3 years at max, but then she posted about it on her Instagram, and I was like, wait, 5 years? Are you sure? But yeah, 5 years. Anyway, what's your album, Evan?
Did you have anything more to say about it? Sorry, I feel like I cut you off.
No, it's just a good album. Okay, you should go check out Sharon if you haven't before. She's pretty cool. She makes some good music. She makes a lot of good music. Not some, a lot. Anyways, yeah, that's all.
Nice. My album is called Grog by the band called Frog. do you guys know Frog? Because I love Frog. So they have an album from like 2015 that I really, really like. And this one came out at the end of last year in like November. And I didn't really find out about it until the beginning of this year, like early on. And I almost chose it for the last episode because I was listening to it a lot then also. But it's just a really good one. It's a fun band that do lots of cool, silly songs. It's not all silly. It's just a very unique sound that I really dig. And I think that this album is great. And there's a couple songs that are really important to me on it already. So Grog by Frog.
Grog.
And also their other album is quite good. What's it called? But Kind of Blah is the other album that I think is really good. Their album from 2015 that originally introduced me to the group. But the album that I'm recommending for this week is Grog. But yeah, I think everyone would enjoy. So there you have it. And those are our albums, which brings another episode of the Speaking English Podcast and another book club to a close. Catch us next week for the Shiner nomination show, where we will go over, we'll recap all the movies that we watched for the podcast specifically last year in 2023, and do our own little award show, because we want to over the years we want to become bigger than the Oscars. That's the ultimate goal, I think.
That's always been our goal. We always say that. I think we've made great strides.
Yeah.
I wish you success. I'm sure it'll happen any day now.
But I would say that now is, and I mean, starting now, but also when we talk about it next episode, if there's any movies that we watched that you're interested in seeing, now's the time, like last year, now's the time to watch them. And we'll give the full list next episode and talk about the best of the best. But I think it'll be a fun one, because at least for me, there's no clear like winner for a lot of these, just in the kind of glancing over what we've seen.
Yeah.
And we talked about it last episode too. And I do want to point out that I think Cría Cuervos is in my list now. I reevaluate. I said it wasn't quite like tied up there with the top ones from the podcast.
Yeah.
But after evaluating it, thinking about it a little bit more, I think it is. So it's like a four-way tie for my favorite podcast movie of last year. So
cool.
We'll get into that next episode and have our official nominations. Stay tuned.
Always a fun time.
Yeah.
This is a fun season on the pod.
Yeah, it's always a fun season on the pod. We got a lot of different stuff going on. I think it's cool.
It is cool.
So yeah, that'll be then. And Book Club 28 will be decided and announced.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear your pick, Aubrey.
Yeah,
make it a good business one. Days?
Oh my God, the pressure now. Now I feel like I have to recommend something silly just because you said make it good.
Honestly, it's silly. Fun to read something silly. 10,000 Leagues Under the Sea was kind of silly.
It was a little silly.
So maybe we need some sort of happy medium.
Silly, but a little serious.
Thing. Yeah. I don't know. I trust you. You'll figure it out.
Yeah, you'll pick something good.
We'll get there when we get there.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, that'll all be coming up. Lots to be excited for here on E Old Speaking English Pod. So thanks for listening, one and all. we'll catch you next time around, whenever that may be. And do great things this week. We all believe in you.
We do.
Especially me.
No, especially me, Addie.
I don't know if I believe in you. I believe in a medium amount. I'll give you that.
Thanks, everybody. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye now.